morning. Thank you so much for joining us today, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And you are listening to us right here on Progressive Radio Network. And we're so happy to actually be live right here on Progressive Radio Network. Let's have a kudu out to our engineers who, are out there getting to the station to help us bring you the natural nurse and Dr. Z live today. And it's a special show because this is your host, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And today, right with me is...
We have Dr. Z live in the house.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done a show together, Dr. Z. Sometimes you host, sometimes I host. Why don't you just briefly remind the listeners about who you are, and then I'll do the same. And then what we're going to talk about today are natural remedies that you should have available for any kind of viral challenge.
Sure. Well, I've been a licensed naturopathic physician practicing in Connecticut for 30 years. This is my 30-year anniversary this year, so I'm excited and continue to practice. And I'm one of the founders of the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, a 4-year doctoral program, the only one on the East Coast. And I also am an herbalist with the professional registered medical herbalist with the American Herbalist Guild. And I also teach lots of classes and webinars and do radio. And I'm the you and I started New York, Long Island's first alternative radio program way back in the late 80s, early 90s. And so we've been leading the fight against mechanistic thinking and what we call flat earth medicine for a very long time, and we're kind of in the throes of this thinking right now with this coronavirus thing, which we'll get into in a bit.
That's so true. And this is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. I've been doing natural remedies since 1964, and I am a PhD RN, and I'm also an AHGRH. That means registered herbalist with the American Herbalist Guild, and so is Dr. Zamperone, my illustrious partner. And I am also an AHNBC, so that means I am a nationally board certified holistic nurse. By the way, Dr. Zamperone and I have written many books that are available for you to purchase, and some are ebooks, and you can download them for a very great discount. Just go to naturalnurse.com. And at naturalnurse.com, we list all our events that are coming up, because Dr. Z and I are still planning to do outside herbal gathering and identification workshops. And after today, you know that these are survival tools. You need to know your plants that are right outside your door. You need to know them now. Many of them are antiviral, antibiotic, anti-flu, anti-corona, and you need to know which ones they are. And we are allowed, by the way, to discuss this because we're talking about it in an informational sense, and we're not trying to sell you any particular product about it. We're talking about these herbs and natural remedies just in an educational sense. So I'm so happy you're able to be with us today, Dr. Z.
Great. I'm excited to talk about what I did with my students. I just got back from Jamaica, had a great Eco Tours for Cures trip down there. And, hearing all the news and whatever, being outside the country, you're kind of cut off a little bit, especially where we are in very rural St. Mary Parish, very little internet. But occasionally we'd hear glimmers of, people freaking out, buying toilet paper, raiding the shelves, just reacting as if this was the bubonic plague. And I was just scratching my head and saying, wow, I know it's an interesting virus, and it does have it is a little bit more virulent than the flu, but really, is this really a response? And then much of it is, I think, mass media hysteria, which you know, we never really hear the other side in medicine. We hear mechanism, which is sort of man against nature. You're basically a shorn lamb that if a virus attacks you, you're going to get sick and it's going to cause a lot of problems. Instead of looking at it as, well, that our body, which is a more vitalistic philosophy, that our body has the innate capacity to fight against things. And what can we do to make our body strong instead of just practice, you know, social distancing, isolation, containment, and those types of practices, which are very valuable. I'm not knocking them. I mean,
yeah, those are a good start. They're a good start. The problem with those, I think, is that it increases the inner fear. And I do want to make a comment about vaccinations, Dr. Z. People think of vaccinations as, oh, this is going to cure me. But let me ask every single listener, do you know vaccinations? Particularly for things like colds and flus, the yearly flu shot is worthless if you look at the actual data. How many people get the flu if they get the flu shot? It does not work, not only at all. I would say more people get a negative effect from the flu shot than those who are protected from the flu by getting the flu shot. And that is what the data shows. One of the reasons of that is they develop a flu shot. Let's say right now they're developing some kind of coronavirus shot. I certainly will never get it, nor have I ever had any of these things. And the one that they're developing now, viruses can change so much, their DNA structure, and evolve as they duplicate, that by next year, it's a different strain.
Yeah, absolutely. So the idea is, what can we do to increase our own innate immunity? You know, the immune system is very complex. It's not only our immune system, where, like, when we went to school, we learned about, you know, white blood cells and the spleen and the bone marrow and the thymus gland and things like that. But now we know that a lot of our immune system is in our gut, is, of course, in our habits, in our liver, in the amount of hydrochloric acid in our stomach, in our respiratory system. So are there ways to strengthen those systems? And, you know, humans have had pandemics for thousands and thousands of years. True, we are the survivors of those pandemics, that's for sure. But what did people do in those days? And then also, what has been successful in places where we've already seen the epidemic go down, like China? If you go on some of the literature like I did, there are very successful both combinations of Western and Eastern medicine approaches that really haven't made it into the popular news, the mainstream media, that we definitely want to discuss. There are specific formulas that can help you. Also, I tapped into the genius of Dr. Peter D'Adamo, the world-renowned lectin and glycobiologist and naturopathic physician and author of Eat Right for Your Blood Type, and his database, which is called DataPunk, and where we looked at a lot of the literature for what actually is used and helpful against preventing infection with coronavirus and also good antivirals. But the idea is, you know, some of the ancient concepts like the Wei Qi in Chinese medicine, which was this force field that protected us against viruses. And even these ancient people had knowledge about what to do before you got sick. And actually the emperor's physician in China was actually executed if he allowed anyone in the imperial family to get sick. So you might wonder, well, if all this is true in China, why did we see that? Because many times they've abandoned their traditional practices.
Well, it's true. And certainly what's going on now, where I live in Florida, there, everybody who's in any kind of residential facility is on complete lockdown, like jail. They are not allowed to leave, and they're not allowed to have any visitors. And I thought it was interesting in the last presidential debate, particularly the Democratic debate, that Biden actually mentioned that. He said there was a person trying to visit their mother, and they went around to the window and knocked on the door and actually waved. You know, that might be a good idea, because one of the this current infection is that people mostly, it doesn't really harm too many people, to tell you the truth, if you look at the data. It seems that only older, compromised people succumb to even getting ill, let alone dying from it. So it's not that virulent. Like, it is very active in terms of spreading. For one thing, it's a new virus that has been unleashed upon humans. Who knows where it came from? They say bats. I don't know. So we don't have that innate immunity, like you talked about earlier, Dr. Z, where our body sees something and then it develops an immunity to it, which it will rely on again in the future.
Right. And so that's why understanding the virus and this whole family of coronaviruses could be very important, and particularly how they attach to the cells. You know, in order to infect, the virus has to attach. And so the virus uses various glycoproteins, which are part sugar, part proteins, and it binds to different receptors. And they figured out already that this binds to what's called the ACE2 receptor. So we've looked at and combed the literature and found the best substances to try to prevent the virus from attaching to these ACE2 receptors. Because if you can prevent attachment, then you prevent infection. And of course, there's a lot of literature on that. If you look at Dr. D'Adamo's research, some of the biggest foods that we think of for our immune system actually prevent the attachment of this virus. One of those foods, of course, is good old garlic. And another one is leeks. And I always think of garlic and the Four Thieves vinegar, Dr. Kamai, which is a project that I have our herbal students make. That might be a fun project to do during our fun shop, our herbal fun shop, is to make the Four Thieves vinegar. And so the story is different. The legend is not really known, but there's an idea that these four thieves either survived the plague, they were either caught stealing graves and jewelry from the deceased, and they were questioned as to not only why they were doing it, but how they survived. And they said, well, I'm taking this vinegar tonic. Or another story is that they were caught and put to death, but instead of actually execution, they were sentenced by having to bury the dead, and they also survived taking this tonic. Well, this tonic is some of our greatest spices and herbs. Of course, garlic is the main part of this. And it turns out garlic actually blocks one of that particular lectin that the virus actually binds to. And there's another one that is very helpful, leeks. So that could be a good thing that people could just do, is to just, you know, really make some soup. My wife and I made, because she's in the trenches, she's a nurse, she works with the elderly being possibly exposed. So we're eating maitake, shiitake soup with lots of garlic and leeks to try to keep our immune system strong. And we know that there's some scientific evidence that garlic will bind and protect the virus from attaching. So that's interesting. Garlic is truly one of our ancient medicines, and I still think there's some left in the stores.
Yeah, garlic is amazing. And, you know, this can initiate people doing creative things, like make sure you plant garlic so you have enough of your own stash. And a lot of these things really last very well. So making like a garlic tincture or a garlic oil extract. And once you have that, it lasts forever in a tight jar. Because this came upon us pretty quickly. I mean, here in Florida, everything's closed. Every single thing in my community is closed. The only thing that's open still is Publix, the grocery store. So different states are different. I don't know about Connecticut, Dr. Z. What's going on there in terms of access? We have no more restaurants open.
Today's St. Patrick's Day. It's going to be like the first St. Patrick's Day celebrated without any Guinness or beer, unless you purchased some beforehand. But there's no bars open, no public gathering places. The schools are closed. I'm out teaching my courses through, the internet. We're using Canvas as part of our teaching platform. So yeah, it's like they've taken pretty draconian measures to isolate people to prevent the spread of this. And instead of, again, the vitalistic thing is sort of saying, well, what could people do besides washing their hands and staying in their home and hoarding toilet paper to stay proactive so you don't get sick? Just like any cold or flu, you know, what would you do? Well, you know, you do want to keep social distance. That's important. You don't want people coughing on you. So that I think is pretty valuable. I don't know about closing all the restaurants and things like that. But nonetheless, this is what the state's done. So, and I don't know about other states like Florida. So you're saying
you're saying in Connecticut, where you are, also all restaurants are closed. They are here in Florida.
Yeah, so, they can only do takeout. That's all. Right. Or takeaway, as they say overseas. Yeah, they can only do takeout. So, and a lot of places are locked down too. The assisted living places are locked down. And they are the more susceptible folks. Think about it, the nutrition is terrible sometimes in people's bodies, and they do have underlying health conditions, a lot of respiratory complaints. And think about also, Dr. Kamai, you and I, with the authors of our rheumatology book, think of how many people are on those new immunosuppressant drugs for autoimmune disease and rheumatic ailments that have been pushed and pushed and pushed by the drug companies. So many of these medications that people are on, so their immune systems are suppressed. And so this is why it's paramount that we use the vitalistic response and look at herbs and techniques to not only prevent infection, but also help with any viral, and just help get better, because a lot of the herbs and nutrients that we're going to discuss in the next segment of the program are very valuable to either kill the virus or speed the healing. And also, it's very individual. One person may respond differently than another. And then there's also non-pill forms of things you can do for your immune system that I'd like to touch on, like hydrotherapy.
Let me just ask you, when I was on the phone, you were talking about licorice and you were talking about Polygonum cuspidatum. Yeah. Did you happen to mention to our listeners that that is the main ingredient in the commercially available products called resveratrol?
Yes, that's what I wanted you to mention, that it has great antioxidant value too, great for your kidneys as well. Because it's one of those anti-aging, you know, anything in that buckwheat family seems to be very beneficial for increasing superoxide dismutase, which was one of our most powerful endogenous antioxidants, you know, the ones that we're supposed to make in high amounts. So it has a lot more benefits than just an antiviral, that's for sure. But I was talking about preventing the virus from attaching, and wanted to finish, based on Dr. D'Adamo's research, which lectins, and this comes, by the way, from a very important journal, the Journal of Antiviral Research, September 2007, which you can get if you go to our website and get the PowerPoint, which we'll put up there. And they talk about that the herbs, the antiviral lectins for coronavirus include garlic, and stinging nettle and a particular type of algae, and even leeks seem to be helpful for these type of attachments. So first of all, we stop the virus from attaching. Now, how do we kill it? What do we do? Well, there's different. There's some general antivirals with specificity for coronavirus, and the biggest one, like I mentioned before, that came up in most of the formulas that were used in China for SARS, for instance, a close cousin, and even this particular type of coronavirus, because there's already papers out now published just last week of how they have successfully kept the numbers down in China, not only through draconian police powers, but also what did they do? What was the protocol that they gave to the patients? And licorice comes up again as one of the big botanicals.
There's also a drug, Plaquenil, which is interesting because it's an anti-malaria drug that seems to have some effect.
And I found some interesting information on Artemisia, which works like Plaquenil. Now, remember, Artemisia kills a variety of microorganisms. Actually, a couple years ago, I forgot the Chinese doctor's name, but she won the Nobel Prize of Medicine. That's no small task for resurrecting the information on using Artemisia annua, which is called Sweet Annie, for the treatment of malaria, because they're losing the battle of malaria. And Artemisia was one of those things in the historical records that was used by the Chinese and many cultures for what they used to call summer heat. That means some infection that you'd get in the summer time. And, of course, that was eventually traced to malaria, the mosquito, and the various microorganisms that live in the gut of the mosquito transmitted through their bite. And Artemisia has been a godsend. It's actually the best herb for malaria, according to the World Health Organization. Now we're thinking that it's going to be very important for patients to perhaps get on Artemisia for if they actively have the virus. This is not a preventive.
Because Artemisia is a strong herb. It's not usually my first choice.
Right.
Like, it is toxic, which is why it does kill microorganisms. So it's not something that you just take tons of all day, every day.
Right. And there's different types of Artemisia. We're not the wormwood is very toxic. I wouldn't recommend that too much for people. That's how they make absinthe. But the Artemisia annua has less toxicity and seems to be more beneficial. But like you said, in the doses that you really need to take these Artemisia products, which are very concentrated, you can develop some toxicity. And I actually have a patient who was being treated for parasites using Artemisia, and I ran her liver and kidney function on a CMP, a comprehensive metabolic profile, and white blood cell count. And yeah, there were some elevations of those things. So that is one herb that I say is would not be something that you would want to take all the time, like you said.
But you know what? When we talk about Artemisia annua with Dr. Z, let's come back to the fact that people can come on herb walks with us, where we will actually go out, because that's a mugwort species that grows prolifically anywhere in the Northeast, not so much down here in Florida. And it got its name mugwort because it was so commonly used as a plant, which wort is the old English word for plant, into your mug and add hot water. So, you know, that's something that was done as a prevention, something that was, you know, used, and it's right outside everyone's door. So if they're not able to go to the store, it doesn't even matter. But of course, you have to make sure you're not using a poisonous look-alike plant. That's why coming with myself, Dr. Zamperone, on an outside herb walk can be useful, or other herbalists in your area. And then you have medicine there all the time. But Polygonum cuspidatum can most likely be found in a regular herb store right now as resveratrol.
Now, there was another herb that prevented and was very antiviral, that is also coming out now that it's turning into springtime here in the Northeast, that's free for anyone who can identify it. This is why this is very good information to come on one of our field guide tours of herbs. And this is the wild Aliaria, Dr. Kamai. This is the wild garlic mustard greens that, again, is one of these noxious plants proliferating in the Northeast. People are, like, fed up with it because it takes over. But I noticed it all up in my garden and around the woods on some hikes. And mustard green has the benefit of the mustard and also the benefit of this very interesting chemical called sinigrin. Now, sinigrin has been shown to be one of the most powerful agents against the COVID-19 virus, because when they looked at which herbs were being used, and by the way, this is published hot off the press, February 17, 2020, in the Chinese Journal of Integrated Medicine, it says, can Chinese medicine be used for prevention of coronavirus COVID-19, a review of the historical classics, research evidence, and current prevention programs, where they looked at all the 23 provinces in China that had that used Chinese medicine in battling the COVID virus already. And they found that some of these frequent herbs were, of course, the astragalus, which we'll talk about in a bit, licorice, but one was called izatus. Now, izatus happens to be a cousin, close cousin, to the garlic mustard. And when they looked at the izatus plant, which you can't even buy anymore in Chinatown because they're sold out completely, but they noticed that it was the sinigrin part of the plant that had the most efficacious effect on the virus. So sinigrin is that powerful effect of eating either wasabi or horseradish or mustard greens that kind of sends fumes out your nose and fumes out your ears and makes your eyes water. That's that powerful effect of eating those plants. And that was the best antiviral. This plant's free. It's right outside. Right outside, if you know how to identify it. If you go on Google Image and look at garlic mustard greens, anyone living in the North can find these things and start eating them, putting them in their soups, putting them in their stir fries. And if you can't do that, run to the grocery store, get horseradish, get mustard. Today's St. Patrick's Day. People traditionally use a lot of mustard on their corned beef and cabbage if they're going to be eating that stuff. Mustard is very powerful, as is horseradish. Any more thoughts on that, Dr. Kamai?
Yeah, first of all, on today's day that we're doing this show, which is during the lockdown, about this particular virus, these things that Dr. Zamperone is mentioning, such as the garlic mustard, is growing outside right now. It's an early spring plant. In fact, now's the best time to get it. When you find out about it when we take our walks in June and July, which are back on the East Coast, it's kind of hard and, you know, doesn't have that same delicious young flavor. Mm-hmm. And now is the time to get it. Although even then it's medicinal, because then the seeds themselves can be collected, which are actually also full of a lot of the active constituents. And they are delicious as well as antimicrobial. One that I really want to talk about, Dr. Z, I'm not sure if you brought it up because of the technical difficulty earlier, is black elderberry. Did you speak about that at all?
No, it was mentioned in Stephen Buhner's report, but according to Dr. Diadamo, it didn't have as much effect on the COVID virus, but is excellent for influenza and other cold viruses.
Well, the thing is this, its mechanism of action, they haven't had a time to study it yet in terms of this particular virus. So the thing that how it works, that's elderberry, and both the flower is usable as well as the berry. You don't actually eat the berry just plain off the tree, because it does have some toxic chemicals which are removed during processing, like where you to purchase Sambucus. It's called Sambucus syrup, or elderberry syrup. It's also available as gummies and chewies and all kinds of things. Of course, gathering your own and cooking it into a syrup is the best way to go. You have to learn to identify the plant. And we do go on our walk to Bethpage Restoration in a couple months, and that's when the elderberry is often out. The flowers are out at that time, which are also medicinal. What's interesting to me, Dr. Z, about elderberry is actually the mechanism of action that you so beautifully elucidated about many other things. One thing that it does in terms of reducing the ability of viruses to duplicate. Viruses duplicate, which you referred to a little bit earlier on as well, by going over to a cell membrane, puncturing that membrane with these little teeny spikes that are called hemagglutinin, like gluten, like glue. And they actually puncture the cell membrane. They inject into the cell their own, as you described earlier, mechanisms for causing duplication, their own RNA. And then they take over the cell like a coup, and they have the cell make more viruses. That's why you feel worse later instead of better right away. And what elderberry does so amazingly is it interferes with the virus's ability to puncture the cell membrane by coating the little spikes. So that's great. It doesn't directly kill the virus, so it's not necessarily antiviral in that way, like oil of oregano, by the way, which is. That's another one we should talk about. But what it does do is really decreases that virus's ability to duplicate itself. So that's fantastic. Why aren't they talking about these things in mainstream media? You know what, Dr. Z? In a way, it's good they're not, because you already cannot buy most of them because so many people now search online and find all these antiviral things like the homeopathic oxalococcinum. You can't find any right now.
Wow. Yeah. So there's different mechanisms of action of how and what to prevent the virus from entering. We talked about foods and lectins and the elderberry and the licorice. But there's other ones that are very important. Like, for instance, there was a study back in 2018 about colloidal silver, and it was in the Applied Material Interfaces Journal, 2018, February. It was silver nanoclusters inhibit coronavirus proliferation through blockage of viral RNA synthesis and budding. So the abstract goes, development of novel antiviral agents of great importance. Here, colloidal silver nanoclusters were proved for the first time to possess highly effective antiviral activity. And they used the particular, another coronavirus. It wasn't this one, of course, because this one didn't exist probably back then, or hadn't jumped into our species. But basically, they found that this was very good, and people can buy and get colloidal silver as a nasal spray and spray it up their nose, and that could also be very powerful antiviral. I know colloidal silver is a very old antibiotic. It was used by the eclectic doctors at the turn of the century, last century, and many types of silver are still used in the eyes of neonates when they're born to prevent gonococcal and other types of blindness. They maybe have abandoned that for synthetic antibiotics, but silver has been used, silver nitrate, colloidal silver. Any information on colloidal silver you'd like
Absolutely,
to share?
Absolutely, Dr. Z. It's really a shame how if you just search silver in mainstream search engines, you're mostly going to get really negative information, which is really a shame because there's so much great science. And, you know, silver was used as a mainstream antibiotic not that long ago, in the 1940s, before the advent of more current antibiotics. But there's so much studies about silver nanoparticles as potential antiviral agents. And it's also quite non-toxic. The thing that you'll always find if you do a literature search is that people drank so much of it that they turned blue, which is actually true. That did happen. But of course, that they were just because something's good, you don't just drink a gallon of it a day. And also, when they stopped drinking it, there was no negative permanent side effects. But
yeah, I think that was on Oprah that they had a woman, a guy that kind of turned silverish from taking colloidal silver and kind of scared people. But you're right. You want to take these things with respect and knowledge before you. That's why people listen to our shows and read our books and things like that, and hopefully learn and consult with us as experts in this field. But that's interesting information about silver.
Silver. Were you talking about the article, did you say, in 2011 in the journal Molecules, or what journal were you talking about?
2018. It was a journal of applied, it's called Applied Materials and Interfaces, on my slide deck 28 on my PowerPoint.
And is this, I don't have yet.
Oh, okay. Well, they applied, basically, they were looking at the antiviral effect on coronavirus through blocking viral RNA. And these were engineers. These weren't even doctors. These were, it looks like, Chinese engineers looking at silver nanoclusters. So that's a good question. Maybe you can clarify that for the listeners. The nanocluster, like colloidal silver, comes in a lot of different types. The nanoclusters seem to be a new way of sort of making them stick and allowing them to maybe mechanistically help the patient better.
That is true. However, there's also discussion about nanoparticles being somewhat dangerous because of how small they are. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the body might not be able to then get rid of them after the thing that you took it for. There's a lot of discussion about that even in skincare products, where they're using so many nanoparticles without us knowing the replication of those nanoparticles being so small that they get inside the cell membranes and away from the usual detoxification processes in the body. So there's a lot of questions, certainly.
Yeah, I would think that regular old colloidal silver would be plenty good because it's...
That is my favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
That is my favorite one. It's what I use. I have it all the time because I'll use it, let's say, on my grandchildren. If they get a little, you know, pink eye, I'll actually just spray the colloidal silver. We'll use it as ear drops, certainly orally, certainly on skin conditions, and in the right proportion. A lot of the ones that are widely available, very, very safe. In, you know, the normal amount. You don't go and drink a bottle of it every day.
Now, when I was researching coronavirus, Dr. Kamel, I was looking at the structure of this virus and what type of viruses, and I read that it was a enveloped virus, and that, you know, bells went off in my head and said, wait a minute, I know things that will disassemble the cell membrane or the membrane of the virus. We know how to do that. And the answer to do that is, of course, our old standby, lauric acid, monolaurin, and caprylic acid. So I went online, and although they really haven't studied it again on this particular virus, they have looked at it with 14 different human RNA and DNA enveloped viruses. And this was work by Dr. Heer, Holzer, and Kabara in 1982, and found that there's three mechanisms of action of using monolaurin or lauricidin or lauric acid and caprylic acid, which, by the way, come from coconuts. So the first mechanism of action was disintegration of the virus membrane. So I guess if the virus explodes, can't do anything. Then it inhibits the virus maturation. They found that when they used the lauric acid, it stopped, it inhibited a late maturation stage in the replication. And when they looked at it under the electron microscope, they found that the virus envelope could not form the spikes that you talked about, which allows it to attach. So it may not kill the virus, but you make defective viral daughters and sons in the next generation, and they can't infect because they don't have the corona to infect. finally, it prevents the binding of viral protein in the host cell membrane. So inside your cell, when the virus is trying to get into the nucleus, it can't burst the nuclear membrane. So those are three mechanisms of action of how lauric acid and caprylic acid can help us against envelope viruses. Now, I've used this for many years in patients with Epstein-Barr virus and mono. Have you used the lauric acid? I'm sure you have.
Absolutely, because Dr. Z, my own wonderful Dr. Serafina Corsello, who I worked with as a nurse for 20 years at a holistic center in Manhattan, where you and I first met, I think that might be 36 years ago or something like that, we were using it even then. And we were using it for things like candida and other yeast infections.
Well, that's the great thing about many of these things. They're not just antivirals. Many of these natural products that we discussed here on the program today seem to have broad spectrum, because sometimes you get a virus, but then you get a secondary bacterial and fungal infection. And a lot of these what we call plant antibiotics, we actually came up with the word, plant antibiotics, lectins, and other things like that, seem to have broad spectrum effects against many types of infections, fungal, viral, bacterial, you name it.
Right, so that's why golden seal, echinacea, oil of oregano are all part of my natural medicine chest that I'm discussing. I have a full protocol, which is a cold and flu protocol, which is certainly based on a long list of viruses, and it includes things like oxalococcinum, echinacea, oil of oregano, and guess what? Chicken soup is antiviral. There's even studies showing that people do get better much faster. It's not just a placebo effect. So it wouldn't be a bad idea, since we're all stuck home anyway, to make some organic chicken soup. And if you're a vegan, just use all those good vegetables that would go into it.
Particularly mushrooms. There is some evidence that mushrooms are very important for keeping our immune system strong. Things like shiitake and maitake are used in complementary cancer treatments in China to keep people's immune system from falling when they're getting chemotherapy and radiation. So we know that these at least can keep our immune system, our immunosurveillance up there, so that that time that you may not wash your hands or may be exposed, you still have some defense mechanisms in your body that are working well.
Right, and zinc, if we want to just talk about some specific supplements, because research has investigated the use of zinc specifically for the immune support among elderly who tend to be zinc deficient. And it's really positive when used for the common cold. No research has been done yet on the coronavirus, but I would make sure to have at least 50 milligrams of zinc. And the best way to use it, I think, is in a lozenger, because then you're actually coating your throat and mucous membranes that are often the entry area for viruses.
So we talked about a lot of stuff today. We talked about licorice root preventing the virus from entering into the cell. We talked about various lectins like the root of the nettles and good old garlic and garlic mustard greens being very antiviral, horseradish and mustard itself being very antiviral. We talked about elderberry. We talked about izatis, and that it's in the same family as wasabi and mustard. We talked about colloidal silver. We mentioned zinc. We talked about a lot of different things that people can do.
Absolutely, Dr. Z. And of course, one of the best things people can do is visit us at naturalnurse.com. Look at books. We have so much information about all these things in the many books that we offer. Look at calendar for our up-and-coming events, which are almost daily. And by the way, we do meet with clients online. I'm sure you can do that too, Dr. Z.
Oh, yeah. So we're doing
online.
That a lot.
So there's no reason to travel if you're cooped up and locked down like so many of us are, like myself as well. We can still continue to increase our knowledge by interacting with Dr. Eugene Samprone and myself, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And until next time, Dr. Z, just give us a little sign-off pep talk, and then we're going to end the show for today.
Well, don't forget your essential oils, too, because those were put during the bubonic plague. The beaks that the plague doctors wore were stuffed with herbs like thyme, and they probably didn't use eucalyptus then, but they used thyme because of thymol. So think of also perfusing your house with essential oils. And until next time, stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye.